I'm trying to stay on the wagon, but occasionally I fall off the wagon too. So, and part of my atonement here is to produce this software and engage the public more within the process with redistricting. By the way, I helped create that second congressional district in Arizona. I've worked in California and a number of other states, and I've actually worked with both political parties, oddly enough. If you're a redistricting expert witness, which is one of the things that I do, it's to your benefit to just tell the truth. And if it's a Democratic gerrymanderer, you tell it like it is, and if it's a Republican gerrymanderer, you tell it like it is as well. So, and I'm, in that respect, willing to work with both sides, and we are working with both sides in this project in various states. And not surprisingly, it's the party that's out of power that's most interested in reforming the process when you go state by state. So we're working with Republicans in one state and Democrats in another. Now, before this whole round of the 2010 elections, I should say, it had looked like we were going to be working with Republicans more often, and then everything changed. And so now it looks like we're working with Democrats more often, but that still shouldn't dissuade you from thinking that we do welcome and have partnerships with Republicans within the various states. So what I'm going to be talking about here with myself and my colleague Micah Altman is this software that we've developed, and it's part of a project that's called the Public Mapping Project. And I'll be providing some of the overview of where the project has been going, and Micah will then talk about some of the particulars about the software itself. So I'll give you the kind of what we're up to. Again, we have to thank our funders always, and we have two slides. There we go. We have the Sloan Foundation has provided much of the support early on, and more recently we've received additional support for the development of the software from the Joyce Foundation and from the Judy Ford Wason Center for Public Policy at Christopher Newport University. And Quentin Kidd, who is the director of that, will be up here later to talk about plans to use the software. I'm Michael McDonald, of course, and Micah Altman is my colleague. We're both affiliated with Brookings, and I'm at George Mason University. Micah is at Harvard. And we are working with a software company to help with the development of the software, a company called Azavia. They're based out of Philadelphia. And when I talk about the sort of support that's been given to this project, we have to acknowledge that Azavia has donated a considerable amount of their time as well to this project, although we're also compensating them. They have also very generously provided a lot of support to this project as well. The goals of the project at the very outset were just to identify what the barriers to public participation in redistricting are and articulate some principles how we might make the process more transparent to engage more participation. Once we've created the software and once we've articulated these principles, the next thing is what do we expect to happen in the world if we actually do accomplish this goal of having more public participation within this process? What we hope to have happen is that redistricting authorities will be responsive to what the public is articulating about their representational needs for their communities. And in the past, although Tim did mention that many states do have procedures in place and some technology that they've made available previously to enable public participation, usually that was a public terminal in a state capital. Maybe you might spread a couple around the state if you were a large state. But for the general public to be involved in this process was limited at best in most states and non-existent in many others. So this round of redistricting really promises to change all that with the advent of the internet, the ability for people, as you many of you in the room know, you can go to Google Maps or Bing Maps or whatever your favorite maps program is, and use that mapping technology to plot out your directions from one place to another, to look up a location. That sort of technology, to be able to push that data back and forth into people's homes, has enabled us to create software that will allow redistricting out of people's homes. And so that's revolutionary. Now, we're not the only group developing this. The commercial vendors have their applications, and as Claire mentioned, the state of Florida has an application as well that they've been developing in-house. So what we're doing with this is adding to that, and in places where such software may not be available publicly, we're going to make it available so that the public will have a voice, even if a state government will not contract or, with their own in-house programmers or with a commercial vendor to provide these services. We are going to make them available. So we hope that there's going to be some sort of response from state legislatures and commissions across the country. We hope to have by having lots of maps out there, we hope to better inform the public debate about redistricting, to have the media be involved. And we actually have had media folks interested in using the software so they could draw their own maps and use them as yardsticks then, and use the other maps that are produced by the public as yardsticks against what the redistricting authority within a state has done. That will be revolutionary, because in the past, by and large, mostly what we've had are plans that are produced by the political process. It's only been well-funded interests, the political parties, sometimes the voting rights groups that have been able to draw legal redistricting plans. Now the public will have their say as well, and will be able to actually look at these different criteria that were mentioned in the previous panel. To say, well, what works best for our state? What works best for our community? Because redistricting also goes on at the local level throughout the country as well. And have that debate. Should it be compact districts? Should you be following political boundary lines? Should you have partisan fairness as a standard, competitiveness, et cetera? All these different competing goals that are embodied within redistricting plans, we can enable that debate. We can see what the range of options are, because right now we don't really know what those options are, because we only see a limited number of plans that are produced by a political process. So if we open up by having a larger number of plans out there, we can have that more robust public debate. Now, in some states, we know that we're going to be going to court. In fact, I think it's just about inevitable that you end up in court with redistricting. Whichever side loses inevitably goes to court. But there are going to be some instances out there where the legislative process or commission fails to produce any redistricting plan within the guidelines that and the timeline that Tim Story was mentioning to you. It can be a very difficult process sometimes, especially if there's a divided state government, to produce a redistricting plan. The sort of political factors that have to align in order to get that plan adopted can be tricky. And so in some cases, because you have to have equal population districts, you will be going to court if the plan does not come out of the state government. A federal court or maybe a state court will draw a redistricting plan for their state or their locality. Because, again, when you get around to elections, you have to have equal population districts. And unless you're just in the happy, fortunate position of that none of your districts changed in their populations, which is it can happen at the local level in very rare instances, you're looking at doing a redistricting. And so you will have the court step in and impose a plan if the regular process breaks down. And there what we, again, hope that will happen is that these courts will then have a greater menu of options to take a look at rather than just the plans that were created through the regular political process. And so if we can't influence the legislature, if we can't do it through the media and have that more robust debate, perhaps the courts will be willing to listen as well. Now, the project itself There are four components to it. And Micah will be talking more about the software component, but there are three other components. And this thing keeps wanting to scroll forward on me, so I apologize. So there's a data collection component that's funded by the Sloan Foundation. And what that data collection components do is very much what Claire described what Texas does already, which is they collect their precinct-level election data, and they put it on the web, and they allow then people to merge that data, that election data, with census data. And that's very important if you're going to be able to evaluate what the political consequences of a redistricting plan are. You need to be able to look at the election data and calculate some measures of fairness and competition. So in some states, are not, or many others, are not like Texas and will not make this data publicly available. So there is a data collection project that's going on right now that is collecting all this precinct election data and merging it with the census data, and that's 2008 election data for this particular project. So this data collection project will ensure that we are able to evaluate the political consequences of redistricting plans. There's a public education component, because if we're going to give people the tools and the data to draw redistricting plans and evaluate them, well, the public then needs to be educated about how to draw a legal redistricting plan, because, unfortunately, as nice as it sounds, drawing all squares may sound like it's a cure for gerrymandering. In most instances, you will not actually produce a legal redistricting plan following just by drawing some squares. So there are other constitutional, federal, and state constitutional and statutory requirements. And so what we've done, not really we, but over the past several years, myself and colleagues at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School have been doing projects. One of them is a project that Tom mentioned earlier, which was a mapping project to look at redistricting criteria. There's a very, very wonderful resource that the Brennan Center folks have created called A Citizen's Guide to Redistricting that has an overview much like the NCSL piece, but boiled down even further. Hopefully it's not boiled bacon so badly, but you can't get a one pager on this. It's got to be complex, and there's this balance of how complex do you make these primers. But it is a wonderful publication. It's available online. It's going through its second printing for hard copies. So if your particular organization wants some hard copies, you can approach the Brennan Center folks, and I'm sure they'd be happy to send you the updated version for the California Commission. So we have the Brennan Center, and then we also have a wonderful film that was produced by Jeff Reichart called Gerrymandering, or Gerrymandering, however you want to produce it. And he actually has a little segment in there where they go to Elbridge Gerry's hometown and talk about whether it's gerrymandering or gerrymandering. So it's a wonderful educational piece. It runs about an hour and 15 minutes or so. And the DVD, it's now out on DVD. So it is possible, particularly for groups right now, to get copies of it, and he's going to make that DVD more widely available soon. So there are instructions on his webpage, gerrymandering or gerrymanderingmovie.com, in order to get that documentary film. So there's a public education component here, and then finally there's a dissemination component. And again, looking at the sort of projects that we've been doing over the last couple years with the Brennan Center and others, we've been holding redistricting forums in the five Midwestern states that are part of the Midwest Democracy Network, which Cindy Canary will be talking about shortly in the next session. The sort of publications from the Brennan Center Citizens Guide and The Mapping Project Guide are part of documents that are in support of that that public education effort that we've been doing in those forums. I've been speaking at many other forums, by the way, League of Women Voters, Common Cause, et cetera, across the country. So we are trying to educate and get the software out into people's hands so that they're aware of it. And this forum itself is also a part of that effort. And again, I would like to acknowledge that it was really with the leadership of Larry Hansen at the Joyce Foundation had a vision of putting this forward and funding all of this effort over the past few years. And as he's recently passed, he will be sorely missed by us. So that's our four pillars. We earlier last year, we convened an advisory board. Here are luminaries. Many of them are redistricting experts or advocacy group members, and it's a very knowledgeable. We were very fortunate to have that group of people. That this thing will not stop. What came out of that advisory board was a set of principles, which are in your packets there, and there are basically two things here. These are principles that are guiding the software development. One is that all redistricting plans, it's really a standard about disseminating information about redistricting plans, because we need to be able to, if the public's going to be able to evaluate them, they're going to need the information from the redistricting authority to do so. And there's some technical details here, but and they're in your handout. But one core part of it then is just how do we get the data so that we can evaluate these redistricting plans? The second part is how is that redistricting authority evaluating these redistricting plans and making this more transparent? And here I think there is a distinction between what we're doing and what the commercial vendors are doing, which is that our project is fully open source. You can get the source code. You can look at it. You can evaluate the source code itself to make sure that there's no black box gerrymandering that's going on where maybe they're unintentionally, because, you know, these things can happen. There could be a bug in the program or something else that the software vendors are saying that your particular district is X compact and it's really Y compact, but you don't really know that because, and you don't really know what might be going on with that because you don't have the sort of programming code to look at that and see what might be, what's going on behind that calculation. So we've made our software open source so that people can actually look at it and criticize and add to it because that's another part of the joy of being in an open source community. So those transparency principles, you have them in your hand. They were endorsed by a number of organizations, and Micah and I published a Washington Post op-ed on this as well over the summer, and so I suggest that you take a look at it. And so here's our website. It's publicmapping.org. It has links to all of the resources that I described to you earlier in the presentation. And I suggest that you go there. It's, again, fairly easy website. And with that, I will hand it over to Micah to talk about the software itself. And I'm going to try to get this thing to stop its automatic slideshow. It's still. All right. Well, hand it off to Micah.
Okay. Well, we're having this brief technological interlude. My name's Micah Altman. I've been writing about redistricting for maybe 14 years and developing open source software for more than a decade or so. This project sort of started about 6 years ago when Mike, Karen McDonald and I were looking at the availability of information and transparency and redistricting in the 1990 and 2000 cycles. And one of the striking things was that excellent. I'll stay with that. That's Yes. There we go. Okay, so I can just keep clicking?
No, you just click on that one. We'll start the show.
Ah. All right. So the 2000 cycle brought with it a huge increase in the amount of data that was made available through redistricting websites and information about plans. But the tools for actually participating in redistricting, for creating plans, were expensive and complex, and there was a huge barrier to entry in that process. And web, and this is still on auto advance after that, web 2.0 and the sea changes that have been that have came with Google Maps and web mapping has really made it possible to create web-driven map creation by the public to support that. So we've developed a very streamlined system which aims to avoid the complexities of GIS packages and has a real singular focus on enabling as many people as possible to create legal redistricting plans. And this is a picture of it. You can sign in or to create plans or browse for free. It follows the principles of transparency. It is open source, as Mike described. It's meant to be openly accessible, and the data is made available as well. The second step is to choose legislative bodies, and you can choose from any number of legislative bodies in the state, and have different sets of templates associated with that. Any of the plans that are available for starting out in the system or are shared later by users are available for downloading. So when you create, you could take these plans and look at them in another system, such as Maptitude. Once you've chosen a particular starting point, whether it's a blank plan or the previous legislative plan or a plan that's been shared by other users in the system, you can drill down and get the picture. And the idea is to be able to zoom in. As you zoom in, you naturally see more and more detail. So if you want to see block-level information, it's there. All you have to do is zoom in closely enough, and you'll start to see tracks, BTDs, blocks, that level of information. This sort of standard tools for panning and zooming and all that sort of thing are there. And the next round of this will add Google Map layers so that you can see your districts in contexts that you're used to. When you drill down, you can also examine information about particular tracks. This gives you basic demographic information. We can store a whole lot more information about census units than this. And you can get information about individual districts. And these are examples of different sorts of information. Some of the basics, we have one measure of compactness, a sort of circle, bounding circle compactness, contiguity, population. There are multiple tabs for this demographic, for this scoring information, so you can add variables. We've added demographic variables, but if you have information on registration, other sort of that would, or other variables that you can associate with census units, you can report on those as you're editing the districts. You can get simple totals as you're editing the districts. When you've looked around and you've sort of explored the space, you can start to make a plan. You can take any of the plans that are published to the system, make a copy of them,
and then select blocks and reassign them. You can reassign them by naming the district or painting, choosing a district and painting out new lines or dragging census area from one place to another. And when you do that, two things will happen. First, the sidebar scores will change. It'll tell you whether you're reaching equal population. And second of all, the colors of districts will change. If you're off balance on one criteria, if you're overpopulation, you can see the districts that are overpopulation in orange and the ones that are underpopulation in blue and drag from orange to blue to even things out. Now, not all of the information that you'd want is in, is easy to convey in a few simple web pages. So we have the ability to do reports, and this is based on the BARD open source software, which is really an expert package written in R for redistricting. And this can give reports on practically anything about the districts, including split geographies, competitiveness of particular districts, distribution of population, different flavors of compactness. And so these reports you can run, you can download, you can also take the whole thing and run that separately. And once you're satisfied with your new plan, you can share it. So just hit the publish button. That plan is available on the website. It appears in that list of available plans. Others can browse it. Others can copy it and use it as a template. And you can include a link to it on your web page, put it in your blog. So what can you do this? We encourage people to use this to not only explore the redistricting alternatives, create alternatives to politics as usual, but also to just identify where their communities are. And we're adding functionality to do specifically that. This is all based on best of class open source components. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. But we are extending, we're using these and extending the functionality these provide. And we have some functionalities coming soon, particularly the ability to create independent community layers where whether or not you want to draw a whole districting plan, you can identify where you believe your communities are and share that set of communities with others and overlay those on top of whatever districting plans are available in the system, and the ability to run a contest where you can compare your plans to others' plans based on different sets of scoring criteria, the ones that you feel are most appropriate. More information is available on our website. And there's a link to our demo software where you can test drive it.
Alrighty, so we'll take questions if there are any. Yes, we'll work across the so, gentleman back. Yes.
When do you anticipate that might be available? I mean, you'll have it on your website.
Yes. So the Census Bureau is being mum exact as to the exact date when the data are going to come out. The geography data have already been released, by the way. I think for most states, yeah. We've got a few more to go, that geography release actually gives you an indication of when the population data are also going to come out for the state. So you can expect a similar sort of sequencing to that. And, of course, the four states that have the elections this year are the ones that have already had data. Within the next couple of weeks, we're going to those data. There was a wonderful piece in the Washington Post about Kathy McCulley, who is the person who runs that data program for the Census Bureau. They FedEx those CDs off, and once they do that, then they make the data available. And then we do have to load the data into the software. And what we didn't describe, and I'll just go take a minute to describe this in a little more detail, what we're doing is now, of course, you can get the source code, and it is possible to do an install of the software on your own servers. But we've decided that one of the easiest ways to disseminate this software broadly is through the Amazon Web Services. So what we do is, and you can get the demo that you, we were just showing you right now, from Amazon Web Services. You create an Amazon account. We have something that's called an AMI that you can copy that, basically the program, over into your Amazon account. And following the steps that are on our public mapping website, and then you can be up and running with that demo. And so what we're going to do is we're going to preload versions of the software with data from the various states. And so if you are interested in doing redistricting in Virginia, then there will be a Virginia instance of this software, and you would create your Amazon account and copy the software over into your Amazon account, and then you would be up and running with an instance for your personal use in Virginia. Now, Quentin can probably talk a little bit more about this, but the Judy Wason Center at Christopher Newport is supporting the Governor's Advisory Commission last week or this week. The Governor McDonnell released an executive order stating that they would he would support an advisory commission to him, and the part of that executive order was to authorize the collection of private funds to support it. So it's we're in tight budget times, and you can see it's affecting even redistricting. So the Judy Wason Center, I believe, will be putting up an instance of the software that will just be generically available to the public. And we expect there are going to be similar funded operations, say, in the Midwest, that's part of the Midwest Democracy Network. That would be Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana now, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. So they have their plans to use the software, and there are other organizations around the country that are going to provide public access generically. If you're not lucky enough to be in a state like that where there's going to be some group out there who's going to take on the administrative effort of installing the software and making it available, then there will be this other option for you to get this data from the census from us that we've preloaded into the software and then be off and running within your state. So we'll work our way across.
Yeah, I just wondered, you talked about moving census blocks around on the map. Can you move precincts around on the map? Are the precincts identified, and do they move?
You can configure any set of census geography and use that as the selection unit. What you will see is the most coarse level at the biggest zoom level. So first you'll see counties, and as you drill down, you'll see whatever's been supplied by whoever set this up. Right now, in our demo, we have counties, tracts, and blocks, but it's easy to add any sets of other layers as long as you can match them to the census geography to get all the population and all that sort of stuff right.
Okay, well, there's one up here, and then we'll go to the back. Yeah.
In your data analysis, you've got all sorts of scholarly indicators like compactness and contiguity. I think you've got different benchmarks in your data. What about more controversial indicators that might be more user-friendly for the average citizen, like to what extent do these districts create polarization or disenfranchise independents? All sorts of other indicators that would be less scholarly but maybe might be more useful to average citizens trying to analyze the merits of different redistricting plans.
Jim, if you give me R code for that, I'll put it in the report.
And Mike is not kidding. So one of the the good things about this, doing this software development in open source way, is that if you want to contribute something to it, wonderful. We're happy to add it in there. We don't want to. We want to be open and have public participation in the software development as well. Now, I think it'd be very difficult to create a polarization measure, and that actually sounds to me like a scholarly measure. In any case, but as far as disfranchising independents, we do plan to have measures of the number of non-major party voters within districts, so you could actually evaluate that with the software. Currently in our demo, we don't have that information yet, but it's election data. If it's available, we can make it available in the software. All right, so we'll move over to this side.
Hi, I'm Jerry Kafer with Common Cause Maryland. I want to go kind of the opposite direction of the last question. I personally am in the camp of people quite attracted to the take politics entirely out of the process thing, although I should, about 6 years ago, I had a letter published in the Washington Post arguing for an algorithm, an open source algorithm to do the redistricting. I should say that is not Common Cause's position. They were very involved in the California thing and advocate various social goals that we would like to achieve for it. But I think there's some value in the exercise, anyway, of the purely mathematical process by which you might do it, at least possibly as a baseline for evaluation. And I'm wondering if there are things that you've talked a certain amount about. You know, people can evaluate it, but they're evaluating it against a whole bunch of goals that are not necessarily comparable. And I'm interested in the possibilities of ways to standardize the evaluations, or say if you're going to evaluate on this criteria or that, or you have eight different social goals, can we measure how far you've gotten off of a baseline with each of them? And I just would like to say, many people here probably know that 2 years ago the American Mathematical Society had a whole session on this with about 30 papers on the various difficulties of this. So I know there are people out there, and so the other thing I was wondering is, are you reaching out at all to some of those groups who are doing that kind of work? Thank you.
Well, we were at that panel. We participated at the mathematical, and we've actually written extensively on this topic as well. And this BARD package that Micah mentioned earlier stands for Better Automated Redistricting. And I mean, for a real nerd, Bard was also the archer who slew Smaug in The Hobbit. So, when Peter Jackson comes out with it, that people will know him better. And so we know very much about the technical difficulties. There's a law review article that we wrote over the summer that goes into this. And I'll just hand it off to Micah to talk more about that.
So one of the first things that I published after grad school was the results of attempting an automated redistricting on an automated generating population based solely on compactness, and the upshot of it was that compactness tended to favor concentrated minority populations. So that there are not. If you have a democratic support base that's clustered around cities, you might think of it that way. And other sorts of work, Jennifer Jarrett and Mike McDonald's work, and I know Jonathan Rodden has a paper on this, look at some of what happens when you take a simple criterion and try to select for that. And there can be systematic political consequences in a particular geographic and demographic context. So our aim here was to allow people the maximum freedom to create the districts that they wanted, and give them the tools to do that, and see how people identify their communities. I mean, we don't really have a lot of information about where people draw their communities on a map, for example, or how they perceive different sorts of trade-offs.
I would just go back and add that Again, we've actually written an automated redistricting algorithm, and I can tell you it may be the purpose of writing that was to say that automated redistricting doesn't work. It's very difficult to get it to optimize, and again, as Micah's indicating, these criteria may have hidden political consequences, or maybe not even so hidden, and there's actually been a history of using ostensibly neutral criteria with an actually intended political purpose behind them. What you could use it though for, and I think there are some uses. If you were if you drew a plan and you wanted to improve upon it on some criteria, I think there's that option to use automated algorithms. But just to say, here's a blank slate, and here's some criteria, and I'm going to set the computer off and running and do it. It sounds very intuitively easy, and it should be easy to do, but it's just so complicated because there's so many different combinations of districts out there. They exceed the number of quarks in the universe for just a particular state. So it's very difficult to find that best plan. And so you could get something by using IMA redistricting. It's not going to be the best, and it's probably going to have some biases that are inherent in it. So what we think is, well, let's just have a conversation about what it is that we value about our representation, and does the different options that we are known to be available to us, how do they best achieve those goals and have that public discourse rather than just kind of completely throw it off to a computer?
Just to follow up, I just wanted to say I think this is terrific, and thank you very much for producing a tool that allows the conversation to move forward, which is probably more important than what the result is anyway.
Thanks. So let's go back and then across.
Do you have any sense of why more states aren't doing what Florida's doing in terms of just doing something like this on their own, where they create their own web-based tool for redistricting?
Well, quite frankly, when we were at the early stages of this, and state governments were coming to us and local governments were coming to us asking about inquiring about the software, I said, well, go to the commercial vendors, because you're guaranteed to have support and they were further along in their process. So it's very expensive to build this, and this has not come free. Danny Goroff, I can see, is from the Sloan Foundation, is here. He's a program director. He knows very well that this is not free, and the version that Florida has developed cost several hundred thousand dollars for them to develop, and the commercial vendors, I don't know exactly what their pricing scheme is, but for this sort of internet, you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars for your group, and so we are making it freely available, and I we haven't mentioned, and I just want to, for full disclosure, there are some web hosting costs that are involved in this. But they're fairly minimal. I mean, if you were running just a small size for a small group of people, you're basically free. Where the costs start becoming more extravagant, if you will, would be if you wanted to do something statewide for a large group of people, all simultaneously drawing maps. And there you're talking around $2,000 a month to support the web hosting. And one of the great things about using Amazon is that you can ratchet up or down your the size of the server that you're using based on the number of people that are coming in and trying to use your software. So if you were getting lots of hits, you could increase the size of your server temporarily, or if you weren't getting a lot, you could decrease it, and that way you can better manage your costs as an organization.
Craig Gilbert with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. What are your thoughts about the best ways to measure the partisan character of a district? And are there sort of best standard practices that participants use in terms of the combination of election contests, the time span they draw from in measuring that?
That's a very difficult question. because I've done this, and that's one of the consulting services that I provided. Generally, what people like to do is use some lower ballot offices that are fairly competitive, where partisanship is pretty much the only cue that people have about how they're voting. Now, you can never fully escape from that because you still have people coming from certain regions of the state. You know, they're a state legislator who's running for a lieutenant governor or something like that, and so people know that person better in their area. So what you could also do is average across a number of these elections to try and smooth out those sorts of still candidate sort of specific effects that you have or campaign specific effects. And they're more esoteric and I think sometimes better, but they're more political science-y. So, but there are statistical measures that I consulted to the Arizona Commission in evaluating the competitiveness of the districts there. You can actually try and correspond that measure that you have of partisanship to the actual legislative election returns for the chamber that you're trying to redistrict and better match that up to get this sort of underlying measure there. What we're most likely going to provide is some fairly crude measures, unfortunately, because while there's this data collection project going on, it's not going to be as comprehensive as we might like it to be. Now, in some states like Texas, wonderful data there. We're going to be able to get a really good measure out of Texas. Some other states where the state government isn't going to do anything to make any data available, we're just going to have some 2008 election data, and we may just be restricted to looking at presidential vote or if there was a Senate race or something like that in that particular state. So it's going to vary based on what the states are making available. And our first preference, by the way, and I've told the state governments, is that we want to use your same data that you're using, because we don't want to – it wouldn't be a very fruitful discussion for us to say, oh, we're using this data here to evaluate the political consequences, and you're using a different set here, and the state legislature thinks that their plan is fair, but we don't think it's fair. And that wouldn't be a very productive sort of debate about data. The public's eyes is going to glaze over, and that's not going to be something that really going to engage people. So what we hope to have happen is that the redistricting authorities will be forthcoming with their data, and as part of the sort of transparency principles that we've been articulating out there, and the Washington Post was gracious enough to publish that, and other people have picked up on this theme, is, yeah, let's get that data out there so that we can have a similar metric, so we're not having a really esoteric argument that's not going to engage anybody. Let's get that data out there so that we can have that debate. Okay, one last question. And
you haven't said anything about the role of universities in terms of teaching. A lot of these are political science questions, but a lot of these are also public policy questions, and it seems to me in terms of hosting people and doing the research and disseminating things, and you just haven't talked about outreach to the education community.
I would have said that's a planted question because I wanted to discuss it as we transitioned onto the next panel. So thank you very much for that vehicle. Yes, we have had Quentin's going to talk about the redistricting competition that Virginia's holding among the universities and colleges in the Commonwealth. We know of similar competitions in Ohio and Indiana that are going to be using the software. We've had contact with academics from across the country who want to use the software either in their classroom as a teaching tool or working with advocates within their state to evaluate what's going on with the state legislature, but also, again, to draw some maps and provide a counterpoint to what's going on within the state, the political process within that state. So far, for just the demo that we've created, we've had organizations from approximately half the states. And unfortunately, I can't tell you all of the states because not all the time do people tell me where they are. They're just giving me an email address. But so recorded, we have about half the states. And I think, you know, this is very early interest in the software. And I expect that once we do this further dissemination like this event and other work in the media as we move forward, I think there's going to be even more interested in that, and especially working with our partners at Common Cause and the League of Women Voters. Nancy Tate will be speaking just shortly. And their state directors, getting them involved in this process as well. I think we're going to have fairly widespread public participation this time around, and it's just really wonderful. We've done a lot of prep work leading into this round of redistricting, again with that vision that Larry Hansen had to educate the public in advance. That's different than we were 10 years ago. So the educational components are there, the software is there, and now we just get to wait and see. Did we do something? Did we build it? Did they come? And hopefully they will. So in this next panel, we'll be talking about that. So thank you.